Welcome to the Family Farm Podcast, priority topics for family medicine and community pharmacy. Everyone, my name is Tina Lian, and I'm a fourth-year pharmacy student at the University of British Columbia.
And I'm Billy Lin. I'm a family practice resident at UBC.
So on our last episode, we talked about the signs and symptoms, diagnosis, and the CADRA guidelines on ADHD. So today, we'll focus more on the drug treatment. I'll first go over the criteria for initiation of pharmacotherapy in children with ADHD. And then after that, I'll move right into the drugs, which are stimulants, and that's including methylphenidate and amphetamines. The non-stimulants, including atomoxetine, and lastly, other treatment options. And the one I'll mention more in this episode is clonidine. And as before, the mechanism of action, side effects, drug interactions, as well as some cautionary notes will be mentioned for each medication I'll be discussing today.
Before we go into the pharmacological treatments of ADHD, let's talk quickly about non-pharmacological treatments, in particularly the behavioral therapies, which essentially minimizes the negative behaviors and promotes the positive ones by teaching parents and teachers to improve the child's behaviors. Behavioral therapy alone are found to be inferior to stimulants in terms of controlling the core symptoms of ADHD, but in combination, the behavioral therapy plus pharmacological treatment is more effective at reducing oppositional behaviors and anxiety and improving social interactions and self-esteem when compared to either therapy alone. Another strategy is to try to eliminate certain foods, such as certain sugars, dyes, or preservatives. Neurofeedback or hypnosis can also be tried, but there's not enough evidence to support their routine use.
So let's start with the criteria for initiation of therapy. So there are a few criteria for initiating pharmacotherapy in children with ADHD, and those include: a diagnostic assessment should be complete and confirms the diagnosis of ADHD. The child is age 6 years or older. The parents accept medication as a contribution to management. Also, the school will cooperate in administration and monitoring of the drug therapy for the children. There should also be no previous sensitivity to the chosen medication. And some criteria for the child are that the child has a normal heart rate and blood pressure, is seizure-free, does not have Tourette syndrome, does not have pervasive developmental delay, and does not have significant anxiety. Also, you want to make sure that substance abuse among household members is not a concern when you want to start the children on immediate release stimulants. So some alternatives for these children are atomoxetine, osmotic release methylphenidate, or the methylphenidate patch. Now let's get right into the medications. So the first class of medications I'll be discussing are the stimulants, and that's including methylphenidate and amphetamines. So according to the 2011 CADRA guideline, the long-acting stimulants are generally considered first-line option. However, individualization of therapy is often used in the treatment of ADHD. Now, some benefits of a long-acting stimulant are, first, it is as effective as an appropriately dosed short-acting stimulant. Also, it's a single daily dose and improves the adherence for the patient and avoids school medication administration. As you know, most patients are children who may feel ashamed to take a medication in school, or they may tend to forget taking their dose. Also, a long-acting formulation can decrease the abuse potential and decrease the risk of a rebound hyperactivity. Some common side effects for stimulants are anorexia, insomnia, weight loss, irritability, dizziness, weepiness, headache and abdominal pain. Transient side effects are zombie-like effects, psychotic reactions such as hallucinations, agitation, tachycardia, hypertension, growth failure, rebound hyperactivity, leukopenia, and blood dysgrasias. Now, if the patient is experiencing any of these effects, you want to stop and reevaluate their therapy immediately. Overdose symptoms from stimulants include glassy eyes, insomnia, and hyperactivity. And glassy eyes is often described as a fixed staring and a wide-eyed appearance. Now, if the patient is experiencing any of these overdose symptoms, you want to stop the treatment and retitrate their therapy. Significant side effects from stimulants are sudden cardiac death, neurologic symptoms, exacerbation of tics, and seizures. If seizures occur or frequency increases in a patient with a controlled epilepsy, you also want to stop and reevaluate their therapy. So as discussed, there are quite a few side effects with stimulants. So it is important for family physician and pharmacist to know some common management options for these side effects. So for headaches, the patient can either take acetaminophen or divide up their dose, or they can decrease the medication used after 1 to 3 weeks of treatment. As for decrease in appetite, the patient can either take their medication with meals or take a high-calorie meals when stimulant effects are low, and this usually happens at breakfast and bedtime. You can also engage the children in shopping for food and also give them supplements, for example, Boost or Ensure. And for the dry mouth side effect, they can increase the fluid intake to decrease the side effect. For rebound appetite in the evening, they can spread out supper into 2 to 3 sessions to prevent GI distress, or they can decrease dose or titrate dose slowly. For insomnia, you want to make sure the children is having an optimal sleep hygiene, or you can give the dose earlier in the day. For rebound hyperactivity, you can switch to a longer-acting formulation or combine intermediate-release formulation with a sustained-release formulation, or switch to a non-stimulant if the patient is on a stimulant. For tics, depending on the patient's current treatment, you can switch to stimulant or switch to a non-stimulant. Or you can add clonidine or atypical antipsychotic. And lastly, for irritability, you can either decrease their dose or adjust the long-acting medications or assess their comorbid conditions. Common drug interactions with stimulants are the irreversible monoamine oxidase inhibitors, such as phenylzine or tranilcypramine. Other medications that can inhibit monoamine oxidase, such as meclobemide, can also increase the hypertensive effect of stimulant. Now, if the patient is to use theophylline with stimulants, it can increase their risk of tachycardia, palpitations, dizziness, and weakness. Stimulants can also decrease metabolism of warfarin, which increases the patient's INR. And lastly, carbamazepine can decrease the plasma levels of methylphenidate. And since we're talking about methylphenidate, let's go more into the details of this medication. Now, methylphenidate comes in different formulations, including the immediate-release tablets, the sustained-release tablets, controlled-release capsules, and the bilayer controlled-release tablets. Its mechanism of action involves blocking the reuptake of norepinephrine and dopamine into presynaptic neurons, and this appears to stimulate the cerebral cortex and subcortical structure similar to amphetamines. Now, the recommended dosing for the immediate-release methylphenidate tablets, or brand name Ritalin, is an initial dose of 0.3 milligrams per kilogram per day, with an usual dose of 0.15 to 1 milligram per kilogram per day, or 10 to 16 milligrams per day in 1 to 3 divided doses. It is also worth noting that doses greater than 60 milligrams per day usually do not result in additional efficacy in children. So its pharmacokinetics reflect wide individual variations. Thus, a strict weight-based dosing may not be predictive of clinical effect. So you want to titrate the dose against the patient's response to the medication. Now, because this is an immediate-release tablet, it has the potential for abuse. So you want to use cautiously, especially in adolescents. And lastly, if the patient is using a divided dose treatment, you want to make sure their last daily dose should be given before 4 p.m. to avoid insomnia. And now for methylphenidate sustained release tablets, brand name Ritalin SR, the recommended dosing is 20 to 60 milligrams per day in 1 or 2 divided doses. This medication may be used in combination with an immediate release formulation. As for the controlled-release capsules, brand name Bifenton, the recommended dosing is 10 to 60 milligrams once daily in the morning. Now, the capsule content can be opened up and sprinkled on soft foods such as applesauce, ice cream, or yogurt. As for its pharmacokinetic, it is a multi-layer delivery where 40% of the medication is an immediate-release formulation and the other 60% is released gradually. And lastly, for the bilayer controlled release tablets, brand name Concerta, the recommended dosing is 18 to 72 milligrams once daily in the morning. And for this osmotic release oral system, 22% of the medication is in an immediate release form and 78% is released gradually. As for the duration of action of all these medications, the immediate release tablets has a duration of action of 3 to 5 hours. The sustained release tablets has a duration of action of 3 to 8 hours, and the controlled release capsules has a duration of action of 10 to 12 hours. And lastly, the bilayer controlled release tablets has a duration of action of 8 to 12 hours. So overall, the methylphenidate controlled release capsules, brand name Bifenten, has the longest duration of action, lasting 10 to 12 hours. And now for amphetamines. The mechanism of action for amphetamines is that it is a non-catecholamine sympathomimetic amine with a CNS stimulant activity. As for its interaction, dextroamphetamine will experience a decrease in absorption and increase in elimination if taken together with acidifying agents such as fruit juice or ascorbic acid. And on the other hand, if taken together with alkalinizing agents such as sodium bicarbonate, it can increase the absorption and decrease the elimination of dextroamphetamine. And for the dextroamphetamine sustained release spansils, brand name Dexedrine, the recommended dose is 0.15 milligrams per kilogram or 10 to 40 milligrams once daily in the morning. Another amphetamine is the lisdexamfetamine, brand name Vyvanse. Its recommended initial dosing for patient greater or equal to 6 years old is 30 milligrams daily in the morning, and this may increase to 50 milligrams daily after 1 week if necessary. For the mixed salt amphetamines, and this is an extended release capsule formulation, brand name Adderall XR, its recommended dosing is 10 to 30 milligrams once daily in the morning. So for all these amphetamines, the capsule contents can be opened up and sprinkled on soft food, such as applesauce, ice cream, or yogurt. Now, patients should also be aware that when the capsule contents are sprinkled, it should be eaten immediately without chewing. As for the duration of action of these medications, Dexedrine, which is a sustained release spansils, has a duration of action of 6 to 8 hours. Vyvanse, which is lisdexamfetamine, has a duration of action of greater than 12 hours. Adderall XR, which is a mixed salts amphetamine, has a duration of action of 8 to 12 hours. And now moving on to the non-stimulant, atomoxetine. Its mechanism of action is that it is a selective norepinephrine reuptake inhibitor. Its common side effects are headaches, rhinorrhea, upper abdominal pain, nausea, sedation, vomiting, decreased appetite, dizziness, fatigue, emotional lability, and small increases in heart rate and blood pressure. Now, one of the major significant side effects of this medication is suicidal ideation, and this has been a black box warning. Other significant side effects are sudden cardiac death, liver toxicity, and exacerbation of tics. As for drug interactions of atomoxetine, since it is metabolized by CYP2D6, inhibitors of CYP2D6 such as fluoxetine, paroxetine, or quinidine can increase the plasma levels of atomoxetine. Some slow metabolizers, such as some Asian populations, may have an extended elimination half-lives. And lastly, if used together with salbutamol, it may increase heart rate in patients. Now, the brand name of atomoxetine is Strattera, and the recommended dosing for children less or equal to 70 kilograms is 0.5 milligram per kilogram per day for 10 days, and then 0.8 milligram per kilogram per day for the next 10 days, and then 1 to 1.2 milligram per kilogram per day. As for patients greater than 70 kilograms, the recommended dose is 40 milligrams per day for 10 days, and then 60 milligrams per day for the next 10 days, and then increase to a target of 80 milligrams per day if necessary. Now, these doses can be given either as a single dose in the morning or in two divided doses, usually given in the morning and late afternoon. The maximum dose is 100 milligrams per day. Now, it is important that these dosing are usually based on the patient's weight, and it requires 3 to 4 weeks to see beneficial effects. So as I mentioned before, there are quite a few other treatment options for ADHD, for example, antidepressants and antipsychotics. However, I won't go over them in this episode, as these medications will be discussed more in details in our psychiatry episodes. I'll talk about one of the alpha-2 adrenergic agonists, which is sometimes used for the treatment of ADHD, and this is clonidine. The recommended initial dose is 0.05 to 0.1 milligrams per day, and the usual dose is 3 to 10 micrograms per kilogram per day in a once daily or in divided doses. Common side effects are hypotension, sedation, dizziness, dry mouth, and it can also exacerbate depression. Now, when using clonidine, you want to avoid concurrent use with tricyclic antidepressants or other medications that can cause further CNS depression, especially alcohol. And some cautionary notes are that you want to be cautious in patients with cardiovascular disease or depression taking this drug for the treatment of ADHD. It is important to know that clonidine is often used concurrently to target sleep disturbances, aggression, impulsivity, comorbid oppositional defiant disorder, and tics. However, it has only minimal effect on inattention. So for the above discussed medications, usually the patient would undergo a trial of therapy for 3 to 4 weeks. If it is adequate, then you can review the therapy in 6 months and continue the therapy for the next 6 to 12 months. You want to make sure that the patient avoid long drug holidays. And when switching from a stimulant to a non-stimulant, the atomoxetine, you want to taper the stimulants over 3 weeks. As for some monitoring points, you want to monitor the patient's ADHD symptoms, and these include inattention, hyperactivity, anxiety, and aggressive behavior. You also want to monitor their academic performance, weight, growth, suicidal ideation, and medication abuse. As for the patient's blood pressure and heart rate, you want to measure them at the initiation of the therapy and at the first, third months, and then every 6 to 12 months. And lastly, if the patient is at risk, their ECG should be measured. And now for a quick summary. So the advantages of short-acting stimulants is that it has an extensive data efficacy and safety, and that a lot of the generic formulations are available. The disadvantages, however, is that it must be taken 2 to 3 times per day for a full day coverage. And for the long-acting stimulants, the advantages is that it can be dosed once per day and children can avoid administration at school. The disadvantages, however, is that its side effects may extend later in the day, for example, causing insomnia, and it is more expensive than a short-acting stimulants. For the sustained-release preparations, and those are the dexedrine, Ritalin, and Adderall XR, the advantages is that it can be sprinkled into soft foods for children who have difficulty swallowing pills. However, if taken with high-fat meal, it can delay the time of onset and increases the peak concentration. It is also worth noting that the sustained-release formulation should not be taken with antacids or other drugs that can decrease the gastric acidity. And for the osmotic-release formulation, and that is Concerta, the disadvantage is that children with a decreased GI absorption or intestinal resection may not receive the full benefit of this medication. Now, it is important to know that the capsule is passed through the GI tract and into the stool intact. Now, for the osmotic release formulation, and that is Concerta, one of its disadvantages is that children with decreased GI absorption or intestinal resection may not receive the full benefit from this medication. As for the amphetamines, the lisdexamfetamine can have a lower risk of abuse, and the capsule can also be opened and mixed with water for children who have difficulty swallowing capsules. As for the non-stimulant atomoxetine, it can be dosed once per day, it has a lower potential for abuse than stimulants, and it's not a controlled substance. As for its disadvantage, it can be less efficacious than stimulants, has the potential of an increased risk of suicidal ideation, and may require more time to reach steady state. It requires up to 2 weeks for initial response and up to 8 weeks for a maximal effect. It also requires dosing adjustment if administered with agents that can inhibit the cytochrome P450 2D6, which is a CYP2D6 enzyme. And as for the extended-release alpha-2 adrenergic agonist, clonidine, its advantage is that it is not a controlled substance, and it is also useful to treat coexisting conditions such as sleep disorders and tic disorders. As for its disadvantage, the evidence says that it is less effective than stimulants. Also, it only has minimal effect on inattention symptoms. And lastly, it requires more time to reach steady state as well. It requires up to 2 weeks for initial response. As for its side effects, it can lead to orthostatic hypotension. And this brings us to the end of this episode. So please stay tuned, relax, and have lots of sleep.
You've been listening to the Family Farm Podcast. Please leave your feedback and check out our show notes at fppodcast.org.